Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 301. This is December 25th, 1977. It's Merry Christmas for those people in Carmel or Salinas or Santa Cruz area and the people that receive the tapes in the north and east. It will be New Year's, Happy New Year, and Merry Christmas for all of you, whatever time of the year you receive these tapes. I do date them just for the purpose of getting this information into a time slot, because many times we have things on the air that don't appear for months or years later, and it's interesting to show at what time period they were here on this program, and people do collect the tapes and cassettes, and that's why they're numbered. I like to think that each tape is timely for all time and pertains to those the information that people want to put the pieces of the puzzle together about who is doing the conspiring and killing in the United States and affecting lives around the world through the purposeful planning of these large conspiracies affected by the assassination of particular people. The tapes are going out of the country, all over the country, various colleges that I do not name anymore on the air because when I did, they began to become suppressed. But this is going to be a good year. I know in terms of my research, after 14 years of research, this is a very good year. There are a lot of things in the offing, and the information is getting out at all levels, and I am more optimistic now than ever that these truths can't be suppressed too much longer. Paul Krasner, the publisher of The Realist, many of you know now that he's become editor and publisher of a new magazine, The Hustler. Mr. Flynn handed him the magazine, and Paul and I have been very close friends for 5 years. He published my first three articles, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? It went into the American assassins and the links of Richard Nixon to the Nazis in Germany and how Nixon came to power. And then Paul published my story, The Senate Select Committee is Part of the Cover-Up. And then the whole article, The Realist, in 1974 was the SLA is the CIA. Paul paid his dues all of these years. He became blacklisted on the campuses, the lecture circuit. He's been dirt poor. He did publish without editing out any part of the articles that I gave him, all the information I gave him. And because of that, he was ignored by a lot of people, and his information or his type of humor was suppressed. Now he has received this magazine with a huge salary, and he called me the day that he came home from Ohio and promised that the conspiracy newsletter that he was going to get out for me and couldn't would start rolling, and the people that had paid their subscription would get a year's subscription to Hustler, and I'll be writing one article a month in there called Dialogue Conspiracy, which will be about information which we've had on these shows or new information that'll be reaching millions of people around the country. He also asked for the story on the killing of the rock musicians, the 40 or more musicians that have died that I believe were murdered and purposely drugged that We Magazine wanted. They bought the story and suppressed it. Paul is going to press with that story, and he will be printing my article on the MK Ultra and the drug control of the Son of Sam, the movie that was suppressed this last year that I made, the Howard Hughes mystery that we talked about on Dialogue Conspiracy number 275, that was June the 25th program, is still suppressed, and part of the film was missing, and National Enquirer called me about that, and they may be doing a story on how the film was stolen and missing in the movie shelf. The movie was $1.5 million production, and the National Enquirer called me to see about that. I also am helping with several books that are in the offing, and they are dynamite material and will be affecting a lot of people and exposing more of this huge conspiracy. So I'll be very busy in 1978, and I hope that these truths just keep unfolding. Paul had a lot of courage. He wrote many, many articles up to the time that I started writing for him. I had been subscribed to The Realist, and he covered such items such as the one I did on the Senate Select Committee, and I talked about the plans of G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt to murder the president of Panama. I said they had the plans to kill the president of Panama in 1971 because the president wasn't cooperating in the control of narcotics down in Panama with the CIA. Our CIA has been a large market of narcotics all over the world, and this is one of their main sources of business and control. Jack Anderson published in 1977, December 17th, 4 years after the article I put in The Realist. This is a quotation from Anderson: "Shadowy rumors that the Watergate plotters were going to kill Panamanian dictator Omar Torrijos, that they planned to assassinate him, the White House plumbers," and it goes into the narcotic dealings and the drug dealings in Panama. After E. Howard Hunt got out of prison, he told a Boston television interviewer that there was concern over Panama's drug smuggling, and if Torrijos didn't shape up and cooperated, he was going to be wasted. This is E. Howard Hunt's quotation about the plans to kill him, and we had published that, as I say, 4 years ago in The Realist. The most courage Paul had, I think, in the first Watergate story was the article I did, the center section of the Watergate story, The American Assassins Are Mutations, and it has to do with the combination of Alan Dulles of our Central Intelligence Agency combining with General Reinhard Gehlen and forming the CIA. This is an important story because pieces of this story are just emerging in the news. I saw the David Susskind show on American assassinations, and Peter Dale Scott was on there talking about the Mr. Spaz-Reagan meeting Marina Oswald, Lee Oswald in New York City, or the boat at New Jersey when they came over from the Soviet Union, and how this gentleman belonged to the Anti-Communist League, and he was part of the Gehlen operation. And I published in The Realist that Marina Oswald was an agent of Reinhard Gehlen's operation, the Nazis, and belonged to the white Russian community that had been rearmed and sent all over the world to instigate another war against Russia after World War II didn't succeed. The Cold War would take place, and Marina Oswald was used in the Dallas-Fort Worth area along with these other Nazis and could plant the evidence against Lee Harvey Oswald and make the assassination appear that somebody of leftist leanings or Castro sympathy was responsible for the killing of John Kennedy. These were Gehlen agents, and Paul had published that article in 1972. Well, he is going to be rewarded for the efforts that he made to uncover the truth, and these articles are sold all the time. I'm answering letters and mail on these articles, and I'm really happy that he's going to be in a position now with Hustler with a larger mailing than he ever had with The Realist, and can continue to get out the kind of information that he wants to get to the American people. There was one article in the San Francisco Chronicle this week, dated December the 22nd, about Chief Justice Lewis Powell on the Supreme Court, and it said he refused permission for the American Nazi Party in Houston, Texas, to keep playing their tape-recorded telephone messages. They had a tape-recording message where they offer $5,000 prize to kill Jews or blacks. The American Nazi Party in Houston, Texas, had a big bounty, or has, and this was a tape-recorded advertisement. Hitmen used to come from $25 to $500, but these telephone messages ran like this, quotes, "We are calling for an all-out war against Jews and other non-whites. We are beginning a battle. We offer a $5,000 prize for every non-white killed during an attack on a white person. We offer this reward to alleviate some of the legal problems of fellow white people. We are encouraging mass executions of non-whites in order to make their stay in this country an unhealthy one." They said this is not a call to violence or criminal acts, but $5,000 is available. Well, Chief Justice Lewis Powell, along with Leon Jaworski, worked in Germany in the Nuremberg trials and let all of the main Nazis off, and I think only eight were hung, even though there had been 80 million deaths after World War II totaled up, and another 80 million displaced and damaged. And he let many of these Nazis off and come to the United States and settle in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, in Houston, and all around the world. But maybe Chief Justice Powell realizes, even at this late date, that they're going too far. So the Supreme Court has called off those telephone messages. But the bounty is still there, and I think it's important to add up how many Jews and non-whites are being murdered around this country. I'm doing that now. Certain murders in New Rochelle, such as Sister Cowan did, that seem senseless, or Stacy Moskowitz, and this one shooting of Son of Sam, where he said he was directed or told where to shoot. I'm wondering just how many Jews were involved or have been killed that appeared to be senseless killing, and how many people of the Nazi Party and trained to be anti-Semitic are killing these people, and if this thing is more planned than people realize and not just happenstance. Well, last week I mentioned that I would go into the Gemstone File. Many people have asked me to talk about the Gemstone File on Dialogue Conspiracy, and I looked at the index of the shows, and I never have done it with you. So I brought it in, and I'm going to read you part of the Gemstone File and explain what it is today. And then next week I'll do more, and it will be a two- or three-part session on Dialogue Conspiracy about the Gemstone File. These pages, there's approximately 20 typewritten pages. I'm not going to read all 20 to you on the air. You can send for it. I can make copies if you want. The cost of copying it is 10 cents a page plus the postage, and mail them to you in case you don't have it. These are circulated. They're in London, they're in Ireland, they're all over the United States, and they were put together by a person named Stephanie Caruana. She came to my house to do an interview with me on for Playgirl magazine, and she saw the material I had and co-authored with me a story on the death of Howard Hughes being buried off a Greek island, a case which I'm still working on and trying to get that body exhumed in Houston, Texas, to prove that that isn't Howard Hughes and that our article was the correct one. She came to my house to work on the Howard Hughes story because she saw all this material around, and I showed her what is the Gemstone Files. It's from Bruce Roberts. I don't know any other person that has the complete set. They were a series of letters that he wrote to his mother or a diary that he kept for himself, and the whole file is about 300 pages, and as I said last week on Dialogue Conspiracy, I have it copied, and I have three copies put somewhere, each in a different place to be safe, and I believe I'm the only person in the United States that has it. Stephanie went through the 300 pages and went up to see Bruce Roberts. He was living in San Francisco at the time. As I said, he's dead now. He died of a brain tumor about 6 months ago. And she wrote a summary of 20 typewritten pages, in essence, of what Bruce had to say and what he wanted the world to know. And the summary is called The Skeleton Key to the Gemstone Files. I met Bruce Roberts when my first article came out, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? He got in touch with Paul Krasner and myself, and he gave us this document. I was staying with some friends at Geary Street in San Francisco, and he came and brought it to me one evening, and we were up with him till about 1 o'clock and kind of shaky and very nervous about the way it was put on us and given to me, and didn't know anything about Bruce at the time. And so I went with a friend downstairs, and decided we'd go out and get a cup of coffee. And when we went out, there was a car in back of us with a man standing by the parking meter near Vanessa and Geary. And we got in our car, and he got in the car behind us and followed us. And we looked in our car, and the whole car had been pilfered, and documents and letters of the party that I was with taken out of the car, and the suitcases in there taken away, and a radio was taken. It looked like a burglary, but everything was thrown around inside the car. And we had a chase in San Francisco up and down the streets, and by then it was 2 or 2:30, and everything was empty, and we couldn't find a place to pull up, and there were two cars that zeroed in on us and followed us. And then we finally went to about 3:30 or 4 in the morning, went to an all-night restaurant that was open on Geary, and said the heck with it, if they're following us. I didn't know what to do, and we went in, got something to eat. We went back to where we were staying, and we were locked out. I didn't have the key, and finally went to KSAN radio station, and just as luck would have it, we went upstairs, and I remember they had a waterbed in the lobby, which they didn't have anymore, and we fell asleep on the floor on some beanbag chairs till the morning. I had a radio show around 9 or 10. So I was carrying these Gemstone Files with us all night through this wild chase, and was really up all night, and I concentrated on them and didn't have a chance to go through it, and was wondering what in the world was here. And it was a funny scene, sort of funny now, but it wasn't funny then. And I have the large set of files, as I say, all of the documents and or what he wrote about them. So they were at my house, and I'll read you some of the points about them that are pertinent to you, and I'll read you some of the places where I differ, and this is why I haven't used it in terms of writing yet or getting it published. And I hope the people that want to make the movie in England will seriously go over the material with me, because some of it is in error and some of it is correct. I'll start just by reading you sections of it, and you'll know what it is, because many of you have heard it by name and are not familiar with the works. It begins by saying, it is dangerous to transmit or even to possess this information. There is no copyright on this material. Anyone who wishes may reproduce it. Credit will go where credit is due after the mess is being cleaned up. The Gemstone File was written in many segments over a period of years by an American named Bruce Roberts. Parts of the file were released to certain Americans starting in 1969. The number of pages is over 1,000. I have about 350. It says there are 1,000. It has been possible to verify some of the statements, but research facilities required to verify the entire story would be monumental. Although parts of it seem improbable, in general it rings true. Since the scope is so large and the events described are so complex and interlocking, the skeleton outline of the Gemstone thesis is merely a guide. It begins with the year 1932. Aristotle Onassis, a Greek ship owner who made his first $1 million, was selling Turkish tobacco, known as opium, in Argentina. He worked out a profitable deal with Joseph Kennedy, who is into the whiskey business in Ireland, transporting to this country, and Eugene Meyer, who's the father of Mrs. Graham, who owns the Washington Post, and Meyer Lansky. They imported bootleg liquor into the United States. And also, when Prohibition was over, in the liquor bottles was opium and heroin and cocaine disguised as liquor. In 1934, Aristotle Onassis, the Rockefellers, and the Seven Oil Sisters, the major oil companies, signed an agreement where they outlined an oil cartel memo which in essence said, screw the Arabs out of their oil, transported on Onassis' ship. This was done, and those who did it considerably increased their already vast wealth. Now, the Gemstone File was given to me in 1972. Since that time, we have learned that Robert Mayhew of the Youth Organization worked with Mr. Niarchos, the competitor of Aristotle Onassis, to get the oil contracts from Saudi Arabia. So it wasn't Onassis who had the power. The Hughes oil contacts had more power, because Onassis, who is made the fall guy of the entire Gemstone, had his son murdered, his ex-wife murdered. He died then all alone, and it seems that he didn't have the power. It's in the power of other people. And that's one of my objections to the Gemstone, is that Onassis keeps seeming to be the fall guy, but he in turn was done in, just like Nixon worked with them a long time, and then they took Nixon and did him in. Onassis and Nixon had the power up to a point, and then each of them was expendable. There's an article last week that the reason we're arming Iran is to take over Saudi Arabia, and that's consistent with the Gemstone Files of the Seven Sisters, because John J. McCloy, the lawyer for the Rockefellers, a member of the Warren Commission, started the Organization of Seven Sisters, and they did form an oil cartel, and they do intend to take the oil from the Arabs if they need to militarily. Bruce Roberts studied journalism and physics at the University of Wisconsin. He studied crystallography, synthetic rubies, and made the original gemstone experiments, and this is why it's called the Gemstone File. In 1936 to 1940, Eugene Meyer, part of the syndicate with Onassis and Rockefeller, bought the Washington Post. Later, Eugene Meyer is killed, and a suicide is forced, type of George Morenchild recently, but Meyer bought the Washington Post. Other mafia members bought newspapers, radios, and magazines to control the news media. As the war approaches, new censorship of all major media went into effect. 1941 to 45 was World War II. Which was profitable for Aristotle Onassis, the Rockefellers, the Kennedys, the Roosevelts, I.G. Farben. Onassis was selling oil and arms to both sides, as were ITT, American corporations, General Motors. They were selling tanks, airplanes to Hitler and to America at the same time. He says these people went through the war without losing a single ship or man. At the end of the war, the Nazi experts assimilated into the Pentagon and infiltrated the highest levels of government. And that is what I published also through my research. Before I knew Bruce Roberts, I had published that in my first article, The Realist. He says, Alan Dulles went in partnership with ex-Nazi Reinhard Gehlen and formed a new agency, to be called the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1949, Aristotle Onassis bought U.S. surplus Liberty ships in questionable illegal purchases, and lawyer Burke Marshall helped him. Burke Marshall's important because in the case of the Kennedy assassination, he has been the man to lock up the National Archives to any of the researchers, and he was working with this team way back when. He also was on the Vera Foundation of WBAI in New York, which is supposed to be a liberal radio station. Burke Marshall has been in control of bottling up the conspiracy truth ever since John Kennedy was killed. John Kennedy wasn't the man that they thought he was going to be, and Burke Marshall and the team that I mentioned above have continued to suppress the murder of this president. In 1956, according to Bruce Roberts, Howard Hughes, the Texas millionaire, was buying his way into control of the United States. He bought senators, governors, he bought his last politician, his newly elected Vice President Nixon, via a $250,000 non-repayable loan to Nixon's brother Donald. Now, there's one error in this that I differ with Bruce in the Gemstone file, and I'll interject my opinions as we go on. Howard Hughes and this group bought Richard Nixon in 1946 when he ran against Mr. Voorhees in California. Nixon was still in the Navy, and I wrote about that on How Nixon Gets to Power. And Nixon met Howard Hughes in a bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And when he was just a member of the House of Representatives, and then a senator, and then a vice president, he was being funded by this Committee of 100 and these neo-Nazis of California, the agriculture business, the aerospace business. Howard Hughes was bought buying Richard Nixon as a front man in 46, not 56. He goes on to say, early in 1957, Richard Nixon then repaid the favor to Howard Hughes for giving his brother this $250,000 by forming an Internal Revenues tax-free foundation called the Hughes Medical Institute, with the Hughes aircraft being sole owner. It was a tax-free, non-accountable money funnel or launder for whatever Howard Hughes wanted to do. The U.S. government antitrust suits against Hughes, TWA, and other enterprises were shelved. The Medical Institute in Florida was a funnel for funding members of Congress, all those very congressmen that won't open up the assassinations now or the conspiracies. Gerald Ford was one of the recipients of that money, and he was the one who put Richard Nixon, he was selected by Richard Nixon to be on the Warren Commission, and Richard Nixon then selected him to become President of the United States. The Hughes Medical Institute down in Florida goes into a lot of questionable operations. It's simply an office building with a handful of people, and goodness knows where the money goes, but some of it has been pinpointed, like the Korean CIA, to the members of Congress. So that Richard Nixon formed this institute which funded other members of Congress that would vote for him later to put him into power. It not only saved tax money for Howard Hughes, but by paying Richard Nixon several hundred thousand, he got what he wanted. Nixon formed this institute for Howard Hughes, and then it funded the politicians that kept Richard Nixon going until he again became President of the United States. The Gemstone goes on, in March 1957, Aristotle Onassis carried out a carefully planned action. He had Hughes kidnapped from the bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel, using Hughes' own men, such as Chester Davis, who was born Mr. Cesare, C-E-S-A-R-E, in Sicily, Italy, and the other Hughes men either quit or fired or stayed on the Onassis organization. Now, the Gemstone has an error here, which should be cleared, because people I know have copies of this skeleton Gemstone, and I can answer these questions for you on the air and share some of the facts with you as against what Bruce wrote. In March 57, Howard Hughes was kept in the bungalow of the Beverly Hills Hotel. He wasn't kidnapped, but he was isolated. He was as good as kidnapped, but he wasn't taken down to the Bahamas like he said. It's a, he was kidnapped from his hotel. That is a fact. That is an error. He was kept in the bungalow from 57 to 66. And he never, 1966, and he never saw any of his old aides. Noah Dietrich was fired. Robert Mayhew of the CIA was taken over. He was also in the FBI. The assassination teams were incorporated into the Hughes organization. And the Hughes organization at that point became the Hitler organization, the Nazi organization, the secret government. Hughes' body didn't matter anymore. They could give him the heroin and cocaine and the injections and drug him out of his mind. He was taken on a train from Los Angeles to Boston in 1966, and again, only seen from a doctor from the Medical Institute, this office building in Texas that came up to Boston. So 57 to 66, he was kept in the bungalow by the Los Angeles Police Department and the Beverly Hills Police Department, Captain Jack Eggers. And that is important because the kidnapping of youths or the care of youths didn't just involve Aristotle Onassis. In the Gemstone Files, Bruce Roberts keeps pinpointing the Mafia and Onassis as if these were the two culprits. But it goes much bigger. It infiltrates the police departments at the local level. Beverly Hills Police, Los Angeles Police, the Dallas Police, down in the Bahamas, in Texas, and the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI. It's true that narcotics traffic is involved here, but it's also the satellite control of the world, the communications media that's involved, and the Hughes Company are making the satellites for space stations and communications and for weapons. And they can use it for agricultural surveillance or oil surveillance or minerals and affect our whole lives by these satellites. And the satellites are made by the Hughes Organization and the CIA. So Howard was kept in that bungalow and then taken, literally kidnapped, after he was zonked. He was kept around for enough people to say, oh, he's irresponsible or mentally sick or queer or he talks crazy. And then from Boston, there isn't a trace of a hair or a fingerprint or a sign of the real Howard Hughes. The Gemstone Papers go on to say that a few days later, this is after March 57, in April, Mayor Cannon, the new Senator Cannon from Nevada, arranged a fake marriage to Jean Peters to explain Howard's sudden loss of interest in women. And this brain-damaged person was taken to the Emerald Isles Hotel in the Bahamas, where the top floor was rented. Later, it said after he was injected with heroin for 30 days, he was taken to a cell on Onassis' island in Scorpios, where he spent the rest of his life. Onassis has a much larger power base in the United States, the Hughes Empire. Wayne Rector, the double, acted as Hughes' double since 1945 and became Howard Hughes. Now, to correct the Gemstones, I have been told that by what Brooks Randall said on Good Morning America, that Brooks Randall, and not Wayne Rector, is the double that was buried. But we haven't seen a picture of Wayne Rector, or he hasn't surfaced. So it could be one of the two. It wasn't after a few days. The marriage to Jean Peters was fake. There is no fingerprint of an application for the wedding or a wedding certificate. Nobody saw the groom. The judge is dead. The woman at the office there in Nevada is dead. The circumstances of that wedding would prove without any doubt that there was no marriage to Jean Peters and that this was an excuse to get everybody off of the tail of Howard Hughes. I will go on. Our time is running out now. I just have about one more minute, and there's certain points I do want to make about the Gemstone File, about the meetings of the various people involved that Bruce Roberts talks about, so that I can correct them for you, some of the main points that are correct and that are in error, and maybe clarify it for you. And if you want to order the Gemstone, as I say, it's 20 pages, I'll make copies for you if you send me, it would be $2 plus about 50 cents postage. If you don't have a copy of The Key to the Gemstone, you can write to me and I send you a file, because our time is up. And I do think on Dialogue Conspiracy next week we'll finish off the Gemstone, just a summary. I'm not going to read you the 20 pages, but just a little bit, because many people are hearing about the Gemstone Files and you want to know what it is. And we'll go in essence next week. Until then, have a good holidays and we'll see you. I'm optimistic, as I say. We'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy, and we'll be exposing the truth as much as we can, continuously in 1978 as we did in 1977. We're all still around. It's coming out, so keep your spirits up. I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussels.